Our reading this morning, I told Bob I insisted on reading it myself just because that's the kind of guy I am. And because I want to read it as a poem, and I would like it if you would hear it as a poem. I'm going to read it twice. The first time, if you're one of those people who follows along in your pew Bible, that's great, please do. And then the second time, I'd like you to close that pew Bible and close your eyes and just listen to it, because it's a poem that takes us from God through blessing, through hardship, through resolve. In just a few short verses, it captures all of our relationship with God and all of our relationship with each other in a beautiful way. And it's really not particularly well known a psalm aside from the last verse. So here's how it goes, Psalm 19. The heavens are telling the glory of God, and the firmament proclaims his handiwork. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night declares knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words. Their voice is not heard. Yet their voice goes out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In the heavens, God has set a tent for the sun, which comes out like a bridegroom from his wedding canopy, and like a strong man runs its course with joy. Its rising is from the end of heavens, and its circuit to the end of them, and nothing is hid from its heat. The law of the Lord is perfect, reviving the soul. The decrees of the Lord are sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is clear, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is pure, enduring forever. The ordinances of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, even much fine gold, sweeter also than honey and drippings of the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is your servant warned. In keeping them there is great reward. But who can detect their errors? Clear me from hidden faults. Keep back your servant also from the insolent. Do not let them have dominion over me. Then I shall be blameless and innocent of great transgression. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable to you, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Now, if you'd close your pew Bibles, sit back and close your eyes. A few of the words in here are going to be changed a little bit because they're closer to the original Hebrew. I'm not making things up. They're closer to the original Hebrew. I'm going to read this again. The heavens are telling the glory of God, and the firmament proclaims God's handiwork. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night declares knowledge. There is no speech that we can hear, nor are there words. This voice is not heard, yet this voice goes out through all the earth, and these words to the end of the world. In the heavens, God has set a tent for the sun, which comes out like a young bridegroom from his wedding canopy, running his course with joy. Its rising is from the end of the heavens, and its circuit to the very end of them, and nothing is hid from its heat. The law of the Lord is perfect, reviving the soul. The decrees of the Lord are sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is clear, enlightening the eyes. To be in awe of the Lord is pure, enduring forever. The ordinances of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, even much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and drippings of the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is your servant warned. In keeping them, there is great reward. But who can detect their sins? Clear me from the hidden faults I do not see or admit. Keep back from your servant also those who would scoff. Do not let them rule over me. Then I shall be clean and innocent of the greater transgressions. Let the words of my mouth, the meditation of my heart, be acceptable to you, O Lord, my rock, my redeemer. Now in this psalm, in the very beginning, it speaks of how God is present in everything in creation. And everything in creation includes everyone, you and me. It speaks of how God has planted this seed, this spirit of soul, and can be encountered in a baby goat, the owner of a baby goat, a tree, a bush, the sunshine, a breeze that blows. Everything is filled with God. As Elizabeth Barrett Browning said, every bush is on fire with God. And yet, the voices that speak through these things are not always heard, because we sometimes take them for granted. We sometimes don't have the energy to look in someone's face and see one of God's greatest creations looking back at us. We'd sometimes fail to recognize the Christ in the other person or in all that swirls around us, but it is there. God is there in spirit, in heart and soul. God is there. And it behooves us to wake up at least once in a while and look around us and marvel. Marvel at the people that God has crossed our paths, even more the people that God has on the path with us. Those people we're closest to are often the ones we spend the least time truly looking at. The blessing of them. But then the writer of the psalm goes on from this recognition that God is everywhere and in everything and everyone. The writer goes on and says, but that's not all. That's not all. And he compares the rising sun to a bridegroom. A bridegroom in the Jewish wedding coming out from under the tent on a day of great promise and great joy, looking at so much ahead of him, and this day has finally arrived, and he's full of joy, so full of joy that the day is here as he marches his way across the sky. And if the sun can be happy about the earth spinning in its path, then shouldn't we have joy in our day? Shouldn't we take that next breath and think, wow, I'm alive. Everyone feel your pulse and make sure you are alive. If it's the case that you are alive, you should have joy in this fact. If you are not alive, please notify a deacon near you and we will make arrangements. No, but this idea that we can go to our day, we can begin our day, our eyes pop open, and be consumed with this joy at the fact that we've got a day, that we've got another day. And who knows how many days we have. The point is, we live only in the present. The past cannot be changed. It can be learned from, but once you learn that 2 + 2 = 4, you don't keep going back to it, do you? And once you learn the lesson from something in your past, you carry the wisdom with you, and you leave the past back there. We project into the future our worries and concerns, but often we're so busy thinking about the future that the present moment burns right by and we've missed it. You know, I always think of those people that carry the camcorder, or these days the cell phone or whatever, and are filming everything that's going on, but there's something between them and reality while it's happening, and you can miss the glance, you can miss the love, you can miss the opportunity to be plugged in to that very moment right there in a very real face-to-face way. A very real face-to-face way. The joy of the day. The joy of the day we've been given. This day we've been given. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. I used to say that every morning, hanging out my bathroom window in the parsonage. That was how I prayed, rain or shine. Hanging out the bathroom window to be as close to outside where I most encounter God. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. But this great poet, the psalmist, doesn't stop there, because he's waxing eloquent, yes. But how many of us can keep up that sort of awareness? How many of us can wake up every morning going, "Good morning," and still stay married? How many of us can really sustain the gratitude and the joy in life like that? Well, he goes on to give us the recipe to do just that. And it all comes down to living a quality life and being a quality person by following the precepts that God has laid down for us. Most of them, all of them, are in our Bible, but that's not the only place we hear them. That's not the only place we find them. To live a quality life, to follow the basic rules of being a decent human being, and not just follow them, but celebrate them. Celebrate the fact that you're a decent person and you're going to do the right thing, even when it's hard. Celebrate the fact that you are trustworthy and anyone can come to you and count on you to do what they need to help, even if they're a stranger. Celebrate that fact. Live in that fact. And make the day the potential quality day because of the quality of the character that you possess. Following the precepts that are laid out for us there in Psalm 19 that are borrowed from everywhere else in the Bible. But he doesn't stop there either, does he? Because he recognizes that it is impossible for us to be that good all the time. I used to marvel at the speed with which my wife could hit the brakes on the car and go help a struggling opossum. Because my first impulse often, especially if the offending thing is ugly, is at the very best to just drive right by. I have to stop and say, "No, you need to help." Not an opossum, but, you know, people and things like that. My wife's first instinct is, boom, she's right there to help. That's the first thing she thinks of. And I wish it was that easy for me. But it's number two in my mind. And the psalmist tells us that's the way it is a lot of time. He says, "Who knows their hidden errors?" How many things do we mess up and leave in our wake that we don't even realize we messed up, unless we occasionally look back and see the wreckage behind us? And so he says, "God, protect me from that. Save me from my hidden flaws. Save me from my hidden sins." Because we do have blind spots. Every human being has blind spots. And this fabulous book is full of acknowledging that to be human is to be flawed and screw up and make mistakes. So we go from God is in everything to, and with God in everything, every day is a joy, to, and you can make your day a joy by really aspiring every moment of every day to be the person God wants you to be, to live up to what God wants you to be, and make the right choices. And we go from that to, but when you inevitably make the wrong choice, know that God will forgive you, that God can and will forgive you. And then it's almost like he just throws up his hands. And he throws himself on protection of God and says, "May the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in your sight, my rock and my redeemer." He ends this beautiful poem that takes us through all of existence just saying, and last of all, just submit. Just let go of all the expectations, all of the junk, all of the hurt, all of the regrets for things you did and things that you failed to do. Let go of everything that is an obstacle between you and your God. Anything that gets between you and living the way God wants you to live. Let it go and trust that God will build up from there. Being married to the day, it's called. Each day is like that bridegroom, being married to the day you're in and making this decision you make right now the right decision. And then when the next decision comes, well, hopefully you'll make that right decision too. But that's for then. This is now. This is today. This is this moment. This is right here. And our job is to be alive and aware in it. I want to give you a few examples from my vacation and just after my vacation. The first one of being married to the day. It was the most remarkable day I had, one Saturday of my vacation, which the family, we decided not altogether wisely that we would drive to New York City early in the morning and drive back early the next morning. And the reason for this was going to see a play of my best friend from high school, Wayne Barker. His play, those of you who are here, I've probably prattled on too much about it, but Wayne was nominated for a Tony Award as the composer of the music for Peter and the Starcatcher. And I got to see Wayne's face up there on the screen at the Tony Awards right before they gave it to that lousy Alan Menken. Thirty years, my dear friend Wayne has busted his tail. 30 years of worrying whether he could pay the rent. 30 years of hoping another job would come along when this job ended. 30 years of going all over the country to find work with orchestras, working with Dame Edna as her musical composer, accompanist, director. 30 years of a little success and a slip back, and a little success. And then I go to see him. And it was such a special day. We went to the matinee on this Saturday, and we walk into the theater, the Brooks Atkinson Theater, a real Broadway theater on Broadway. And to see the musicians, the actors, everybody in that place, so thrilled that he was there, and respecting him and showing him love, and then seeing this play and this marvelous, marvelous play that was his, and then walking through the city he's lived in for 28 years and made his own, and just walking through and seeing him spend time with each and every one of us. Teresa is one of his best friends too now, and my kids love him and he loves my kids, and we're walking around through the city, and every one of us had a time when it was Wayne and that one walking together and talking, and he shared his triumph with us, we who had been with him through things that were not so triumphant, we who walked with him through long dark nights of the soul, among many others who had done the same. And that day, I did not think about 5.5 hours to drive home. I didn't think about how tired my dogs were as I was walking all over New York City. When we went to a place called Milk in the East Village to get a milkshake that's made out of milk that's been soaked in Captain Crunch cereal. Can you believe that? Oh man, was that good. And we're hanging out, and I'm just looking at the smile on my friend's face and thinking, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Second one I want to tell you is last night. It's why I got bags under my eyes this morning. I got home from the family reunion, which was marvelous. I got home, and my boy was there. He went home with me. He was at the reunion with me. He has been at Camp Babcock Hovey for 4 weeks. He's got 2 more weeks to go. This is his first time home in a month. The boy's not even 16 yet. We're not ready for this to happen. And I've lost my chief instigator, my collaborator, my playmate, and when we're sent to the corner, the one who goes to the corner with me. And so we get home, and it's almost midnight, and he turns on our post lanterns on our driveway. Well, we turn off all our lights at night when we go to bed. And he says, how about a game? So we turn on all the outside lights until after midnight when I'm preaching 2 sermons in the morning. We're playing one-on-one. I wouldn't have told you this story except I won. I was so tired last night, but there was no way I was going to miss a basketball game with my boy. How many more do I have? I don't know. Do you know how much more time you have? Do you know how many days are going to come your way? Do you know how many opportunities will be a last opportunity? Do you? Do I? Do any of us? That bridegroom is so happy as he begins running across the sky, and another day is there for us to love and share and enjoy. The day that a 16-year-old boy died from a fatal mistake he made on Route 14, directly across Seneca Lake, my 15-year-old boy was teaching kids how to make moccasins. At the very moment that that boy breathed his last, my boy continued to breathe, and I continued to breathe. Ah, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer.